I got two fingers of bourbon now, so.
Yeah, okay, that's good. Yeah.
I got a nice full glass.
I have a bottle of Lafroy, and I just keep refilling my glass.
I have one of those whiskey wedges, which are a great purchase.
Really?
What is it?
A whiskey wedge. It's like a glass, and there's like a little rubber stopper thingy that like kind of cuts it in half diagonally, and you can fill the remaining half up with water so that it freezes the whole glass. Like half your glass is like just one big giant glacier, and then you can pour it in there. You don't have to let it sit in there for a little bit to get cold.
Mm-hmm. Hey, look, but, patience. I'm all about patience.
Yeah, it's like it's kind of perfect. My father-in-law gave me that for Christmas a couple years ago.
Yeah, my sister-in-law tried to get me stones that you put in the freezer to put in my glass, so
I have those too.
Water wouldn't. I don't like them as much. It's nothing like ice. I know it waters down the drink, but there's just.
I use those with ice, and it helps keep your ice cold colder a little longer. I find.
Okay, I'll try that. I haven't done it with
ice. I put like two or three of them and ice.
Okay, that, I'll give that a shot because man.
And I just got one of those little molds that could make little balls.
Yeah. Also, I
get those.
I am really paranoid because I have my dad. I have his old tumblers, and they're very old and they're very fragile. So I don't.
Oh my! My ice maker would shatter them.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want anything to shatter it. Like you have to hand wash these things. And also, it has the bottom of it's all glass. It's Waterford crystal. So when you finish washing, you can't put it upside down because the weight of the bottom of the glass the top of the glass can't support it. So that you have
to. Oh, wow.
Yeah, it'll crack. So, and.
Ooh, John Wick is on HBO.
Oh, John Wick's always on HBO. Don't.
I'm gonna do a rankings of or just a list of like the movies that like oh that movie's on I'll watch that.
Yeah, no, John Wick is a great that's on movie. Also, no one's actually good for this, and it got terrible reviews, but I really enjoy it every time it's on TV now. Jupiter Ascending is so batshit crazy; it's actually great to just mindlessly watch.
My films like that are Wanted.
Ooh, and that's a good one.
I like Wanted. Yeah.
Torque was supposed to be Fast and the Furious on bikes.
Yeah, okay, I've seen that. I'll give it that shot.
8 million, except it's 8 million times more ridiculous. It's up there with Wanted on the. You know what? Just screw the laws of physics.
Let's I'm okay with that. As long as you accept, Jupiter Ascending is actually like a really pretty movie to watch. I'll watch it anytime it's on. It's got Mila Kunis. I mean, come on.
I think in his AMA, Channing Tatum. Someone was like, what the hell was Jupiter Ascending? And he said, I don't know, you tell me, or something like that.
Tatum seems like way too cool
for
a guy that, like, way too fun to hang out with for a guy that good looking.
Well, it's sort of like Brad Pitt early in his career. He got knocked because he was a character actor, but he was really pretty. So everybody said he couldn't act at first just because they didn't want him to be able to because it just didn't seem fair.
It's true.
But, and I think Channing Tatum's on that kind of career path where it's like, oh, he's pretty, but he's actually good. So
he seems like he's self-aware.
Yeah,
that goes along. Like it, like 21 Jump Street is. It's stupid, and yet he is funnier than Jonah Hill in it, like easily.
And also, what is the not the World's End, the other end of the world movie? This is the End.
This is
yeah.
He really played off his own image in that. That was really good. He's done.
Like, basically, it's like, yes, I am a dumb jock.
Yeah,
so I shall just be the dumbest, goofiest jock possible.
Yeah, I'm a fan of his. I didn't think I would. And actually, the Magic Mike movies are really good. So
they are.
I haven't seen them, but everybody said they were good.
Soderbergh, LSU tie, right?
That's right, LSU. He Sex, Lies, and Videotape was filmed down here.
Should we get rolling?
Yeah, no, I thought, you know, I was wondering when you're going to start recording, because you never know if you do.
I actually have it. It's been recording for about 6.5 minutes.
See, that's my thought. See,
tricks us.
See, it's the whole in media rex idea. I like it. Just catch us in our weak moments before we actually start this thing.
I'm gonna take this one and just splice all your comments to make you say terrible things.
and he's not quite as short as Zach, so we can't call him a hobbit.
I'm all just gonna be like. Poser loves Magic Mike.
2 hours of Poser loves Magic Mike.
Hey, I'm okay with that. I'm confident enough in my sexuality to say that I can watch.
won some Oscars and shit. And you know what? Kevin Nash was in it. He's a wrestler. So, hey, tie in.
And that'll get to the end of it. That's our random-ass topic of the week. The rat will be about professional wrestling. And I did my homework. So, well,
I like it.
But
we could have given you like a list of matches. Like, watch these matches, and if you're not entertained,
we'll get into that at the end. Like, let's put that off. But let's at least start with LSU stuff. Because do we want to start with recruiting first, or do we want to get into the abomination that was the LSU Georgia basketball game?
I think we should do recruiting, and we'll try and go start strong and hit the low in the middle.
I promise you, basketball. We're going to go to Mordor and come back to the Shire, so just got to bear with us.
Well, one thing we need to talk about, because there's becoming this new narrative with LSU fans, and it was all over the radio today, that Ben Simmons is somehow overrated and really not that good and has to come back for another year.
Yeah, let's let's put like, that one off. By the way, the answer to that is no, he's not. Yeah. Stupid.
Like, oh my God, no, he's not.
No, he's not coming back. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, he's that good. Like,
yeah. That's just grasping at straws. But no, let's go look at recruiting. Lindsey Scott just announces the two finalists. It's between Maryland and LSU, making Jake incredibly unhappy.
That's good. We like Jake unhappy.
Yeah, and like I said, he's the younger version of me because I grew up in Maryland and I watched Terp football growing up. And look, just accept it. Terp football's terrible, and LSU needs the player more, and LSU football is just more important. So Lindsey Scott needs to come, because really that's the only thing holding this class back.
Yeah, pretty much. I guess, should we say, like, this is sneaky good podcast episode 2?
Yeah, why not? All right, there you go. Haven't even decided which one of us gets to kind of be the host, but how do you take that?
This is a good starting point.
This is totally organized. Number 2.
I'm going to have a sip on that note.
So we have Billy here with us this week, returning with your defending champions. I don't know. Are we champions?
Yeah, we are the best LSU podcast.
Champions to become. Champions to be. It's coming.
It's true.
Call the shot now. 2016.
put us on the throne. So you're interrupting my creative process. Sorry.
Yeah, that's just because you like the butt stuff.
Who would have thought it would be Amber that would shut Kanye up?
Yeah, she totally won that. As much as ever, how much Kanye was winning that, and I really don't care about Twitter fights. And
he's beaten down, and then she just comes out of nowhere with just the headshot.
Yeah, just one tweet, bam, and then he deleted all of his tweets. It was beautiful. But Kanye, you cannot delete things on the internet; it is there forever. So your entire Twitter rant, where you thought you were winning. And honestly, this is also one of my problems with hip-hop in general. He was really funny, and it was a really good rant, and I was actually kind of enjoying it. And then all of a sudden, he just had to throw out misogyny just for the hell of it. And Just stop it. Like, you were doing well. There was no reason just to randomly be anti-woman. So it was great that she came in out of nowhere to put him in his place. That made everything perfect, because that's actually my major criticism with Kanye and also Jay-Z. Run the Jewels kind of avoids that, which is actually why I like them a lot more. But the misogyny, come on, guys. It's 2016. Let's move past that.
Hey, that actually ties into something that happened in wrestling this week. But we'll talk about that later.
See, look at that.
But, I mean, I guess this is applicable. Twitter, recruiting, those tie together, right?
Right. Don't tweet recruits.
Oh, God. Oh, don't. Especially don't tweet like women's sport recruits. Oh God, imagine if that became a thing on Twitter. Oh,
it probably is somewhere. I bet there's a dark corner where it's happening.
At UConn basketball.
UConn fans, I bet. Yeah, UConn fans have got to be awful.
Oh, I don't. Well, recruiting's icky as is. Connecticut,
so they're already miserable.
It's true.
Well, I have enjoyed Michigan leading the Big Ten into the dark path of dirty recruiting.
Dirty, quote unquote.
Yeah, look, recruiting is what it is. It's a slimy, slimy business that makes everybody feel icky. And for a long time, the Big Ten would rather lose at recruiting but win the moral high ground, which is nice because, you know, another year of moral high ground national champions. But they've decided they actually want to win football games, so they're now behaving more like SEC schools. And – I don't know. I'm getting a little bit of enjoyment out of that, seeing Michigan down luck with the rest of us.
It was a lot like
the frustrating thing about this, if you're a Michigan fan, is that at the end of the day, you only ever get one side of this. You know, this kid says, oh, well, Michigan, you know, took away my offer, and it met, you know, the offer might have been contingent on a kid getting certain, like, they wanted to see what your grades would be after the fall semester, or it might have been, hey, we want to look on your season, or for all you know, they might have been not talking to you for 3 or 4 months, at which point you should have gotten the clue. You know, if a school's recruiting you, like, that's part of what's been frustrating about with LSU with the quarterback recruiting is, yes, you know, it's understandable that, you know, you only offered Philippe Franks and you told him you were going to be he was going to be your only quarterback, but that doesn't mean you don't talk to other guys and you don't, you know, pursue other guys. You know, Ed Orgeron is recruiting every single high school kid he talks to, even if he's never going to offer them a scholarship. He still talks to them like, you're a kid I'm recruiting, I want you to play for me, I love you. Doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to offer you a scholarship, but I still love it.
Well, also, it's good just to be in with all the high schools and setting down the groundwork for other recruits. Yep. You treat one recruit well, even if he's not going to come there. Maybe that leaves a good impression for the big-time recruit that's at that school or is coming up in the years in the future. I mean, that's just good business.
Yeah, it's sales at the end of the day.
Lindsey Scott's coach, I mean, I think it was in his Moscone interview, did say that Cameron is at least tentatively kept touch. You know, kind of checked in there. I don't know how aggressive he was, but he did say, like, oh, he calls every, I don't know,
every couple of weeks,
yeah, just to see how he's doing.
So it wasn't like the first time Lindsey Scott ever met Cam Cameron.
Yeah, which thank God, because this would probably be over already if that was the case.
Yeah. It just seemed like that was the case with some of the other kids. Admittedly, you know, like Russo, I was told, the thing was he was committed to Rutgers, so a lot of schools were kind of like, well, look, we're not going to pursue this kid and run off the kids that were, you know, and scare off the other kids that we're recruiting because he's going to Rutgers. So I understand that to some extent, but at the same time, you know, recruiting is about relationships, so you have to make sure you have relationships with these kids.
Yeah, I think Haskins is the big one. Like, Maryland fired their coach mid-season, and as much trouble as we've had getting quarterbacks, like, why would you not keep that line open and just say, hey, we're looking, we're interested, kind of thing? And it just seemed like, because we were very interested in him early on, and then it just kind of seemed to die. And then we tried again, like, right at the end, but obviously to no avail.
Yeah, I think the big thing here is with Franks that LSU put all of their eggs in that basket, which is always a bad idea with recruiting, putting all your eggs in one basket.
Unless it's Leonard Fournette.
Unless he's Leonard Fournette.
You better be really sure you're getting that.
But when Frank spurned the school, which, look, I'm not mad at the guy. He's allowed to do that. This is the one time the athlete has more power than the school. So if Franks doesn't want to come to LSU, God bless him. Go to Florida. You know, have fun. But when he left, it left LSU in a bad spot because now anyone LSU goes after knows they're a second choice. They know they're a leftover. And like Billy said, this is a sales job, and it's hard to sell people when they know they're the backup plan.
Yeah,
there were a lot of predictions today for Scott to Maryland. I don't know if there's anything to make of it. I mean, the crystal ball thing on 247, I usually try to look for key people. Like, Barton Simmons is one of the, like, I think he's director of scouting for 247, and he picked Scott to Maryland. That one I take some meaning in because Barton probably doesn't usually pick stuff unless he's got something. But still, it's all ahead of Scott coming to LSU to actually visit. So it just seems a little premature.
Yeah.
I think LSU needs to be in the home. I know the dead period starts up again, I believe, after Sunday night. So
let me see.
Apparently Lindsey Scott met Future.
Oh, well, there you go. We're in.
That's cool. Jacques just retweeted him.
But he is coming this weekend.
Coming this weekend, and I believe they're going to have it in-home. Either they've had it tonight or they're going to have it maybe tomorrow or Friday in advance because they can't have it after the fact.
And really what it comes down to, if you're Scott, it's what you value more. LSU is clearly the bigger program. You have a better chance of winning. LSU can even promise not immediate playing time, but he has a pretty clear path to a starting job.
Clear path.
If he comes. So... Yeah. If he wants to play big-time college football, compete for national championships. LSU, Maryland, that's not really a choice. Sorry, Maryland. You're coming to LSU. That said, if he values more the relationship, if he's just like, I want someone who I don't feel like I've always been the back burner guy, even though Maryland got burned by a guy as well, I think Lindsey Scott would feel like less of a second-tier backup plan going to Maryland than to LSU. And I think if it's about the love of who's shown him more, then he's going to go to Maryland. And honestly, we don't know him. So it comes down to those two factors that's in Lindsey Scott's heart.
I'll say this. I don't think Maryland offered him until maybe a week before LSU or a few days. It wasn't a drastic timetable difference.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree though. If they have anything in their favor beyond, if they're going to play that emotional tie, it's, hey, it was the last coaching staff that didn't want you, not this one. They can play that card, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
But.
And they're starting something new.
Yeah, yeah. Fresh start.
Hey, come be a part of.
Be a part of something big, which is a big recruiting pitch.
And also there's the negative recruiting where you say, look at LSU's passing offense.
Yeah.
Can't do anything. Here at Maryland, we'll run a more exciting passing offense. Look what I did at Bowling Green. And Bowling Green was fun to watch. My wife was a grad assistant for the band there. So we still watch Bowling Green football now. And they're a fun team. I really like Bowling Green. So I think they'll do a good job at Maryland. And that's a good recruit. That is another part of their recruiting pitch. We have a more fun, dynamic, modern offense than LSU, where all you're going to do is hand the ball off to Fournette and then Geis.
I think you're mixing up your coaching searches, though, because Maryland hired Durkin, right? Or am I mixing them up?
I thought they got Durkin was their defensive coordinator, or their they hired Babers.
Babers went to Syracuse.
No. Oh, he went. You're right. He went to Syracuse. I'm sorry. Yeah, Maryland's got
Syracuse. Syracuse was the school that he was committed to.
Yeah,
but he decommitted to them not
like right long. After the hire, I feel like, right?
Somewhere around there. So I don't know if maybe Babers wasn't you know as high on him or just, you know, I think maybe his offers started to pick up around then too.
That is very true.
Mentioned.
And also, have you been to Syracuse, particularly this time of year? That's a hard pitch.
Yeah.
I actually really wanted to make that trip this year. But
I did too.
Love upstate New York in the summer, but you're not in school in the summer. In the winter, it is a brutal, brutal place.
Yeah. We'll see. You know, to say nothing of the fact that we're all a little unsure about the kids, you know, fit and ability to fit what LSU needs. But, you know, at the end of the day, you have to get a high school quarterback in this class. You have to. You have to have somebody.
Well, even without a quarterback, this is, if not Les Miles' best class ever, it is one of the best classes he's ever had.
Yeah, there's no question.
No question.
So
it's the first time. This is, I mean, 9 out of the top 10 in the state. I don't think LSU's ever done that before.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, that's amazing. And what is it? They have 19. They'll probably have 20 of the ESPN top 300 national recruits.
Christian Fulton should be.
Yeah, it should.
Should be.
And that's an incredible class. But you would hate for it to have a butt.
Yeah. And it's a big butt, too. You know, it's not
it really is.
Oh, man, we needed a fourth offensive lineman.
It's the program butt.
Yeah. What's unfortunate, too, though, I think, is that I hope that take doesn't get spun out of control around signing day where it's like, oh, great class, but we didn't get it. Like, let's say Scott picks Maryland, goes there. Like, I don't know. I just don't want that to be the response because this class is ridiculous. And it would be a shame for people to have that attitude about it.
I think it will probably depend on how the other schools that are in competition for the number one spot kind of go. If it ends up being they kind of pass it up, that'll be like, oh, well, if LSU had gotten a quarterback, they might have had the number one class.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know,
though it seems like almost every service thinks LSU is going to, like, even Rivals, who has LSU second for whatever reason. I like what Bud tweeted about it and was like, If you have rankings right now that doesn't have LSU as the number one class, then you need to fix your formula.
Rivals had some really curious, like some guy like Rashard Lawrence wasn't as high in their rankings. Devin White wasn't very high. Some other guys were a little higher than they were in some of the other rankings. But. but of the big names, like the biggest names in this class, were not as high.
They dropped Willie Allen a lot. I know.
Rivals has always been accused of the Bama bump.
Yeah.
More than any other service. And I hate to feed those conspiracy theories, because at the end of the day, there's not a whole lot of difference between being number one and number two. And
oh, not at all.
And
once you're above five, you've got a great class.
You know, if you got the guys you want, you should be happy with it. But this is something that you want to brag. Being number one, on the other hand, you do kind of want to brag about it. You do want to say, hey, we have the number one class. And it would be weird for Rivals to always be the one that holds you back. And I also don't like the fact that Rivals isn't as reliable right now, because I think they have the best search engine, and I like using their service to find recruits better than 247. But I like 247's ranking and the whole composite thing better. So
same.
I ended up both.
Yeah, the composite's a good thing. It's kind of a good thing to go by, I think.
Yeah, composite's the best. That's 247 has completely changed.
Plus, 247 makes all their stuff embeddable, which comes in handy for us.
I take credit for that.
Why is that?
This is my personal conspiracy theory. So, like, one day I was trying to write something for the site, and this was pre-embed. And so I emailed them, like, hey, it'd be really cool if we could embed this stuff. And then, like, I kid you not, like, 48 hours later, their CEO tweets out, he's like, idea to product in 24 hours, and they had like embeddable content. I was like, God damn it.
Then that's you. Yeah. No,
stole my shit.
We should put that on our byline right now.
I mean, I'm sure it was like something in the works for months, but
just, and the valley shook. The we called 247 to have embedded.
The really thing, funny thing to me about the whole Lindsey Scott recruitment is that what LSU fans have been talking about for years about the whole dual threat, pro style, spread quarterbacks will finally kind of becoming true. Because this is definitely not, you know, a kid who fits more into that, okay, you don't want to just have him drop back five steps and throw. You know, more so than Brandon Harris, who really is an okay runner, you know, and can move around, but is not a quote unquote you know, zone read quarterback like some people I think want to try to brand him as. And then of course in the next year's class with Lowell Narcisse, who's much more of a runner who happens to have a really big arm, you know. Yeah, those are more the guys like, no, you're going to want to run that guy a couple times a game just because they're that good at that. But, you know, not that we want to fight that battle on the podcast.
No, and also I'm kind of neutral on that. Look, I don't care what you do. I don't care if you get it by your legs or if your arm. I just want you to be effective.
Absolutely.
I don't care how you do. And I think that's what most people are. I think it's fighting a battle that doesn't – it's not being able to see the forest for the trees, basically. It's getting so obsessed with, oh, dual threat, you know, drop back, pro style. Who cares? Let's just get a guy who can – who works.
And that's what I was trying to – I think get to, and I in that whole battle, and it probably just got lost in everybody shouting at each other, is that it's like, look, a quarterback that moves your team up and down the field is good. However he does that.
Yeah. Like, you know, Cam Newton is not the best thrower in the world, but he's just an incredible runner. So of course you would want Cam Newton on your team.
Yeah. Or Michael Vick.
At the same time, you know, Peyton Manning, before he became, you know, the fossilized corpse of Peyton Manning, is one of the best throwers ever. And he's a statue back there. But of course you'd want him on his team. There's if your offense cannot use either Cam Newton or Peyton Manning in his prime, then there's something wrong with your offense, not with them.
Yeah.
Hey, Peyton Manning had like an 18-yard scramble this week, so.
It was amazing.
It was. And then Brady had to do one too, just to say, I can do it too, kind of thing. Poser, you're a big fan of Lindsey Scott, right?
Yeah, no, I'm.
I guess big fan, I like
him because I don't care about height and weight and arm strength as much as most people, and I feel that's the reason why his recruiting ranking is not as high. And I'm not saying, look, measurables do matter. I don't want to say that they don't matter at all, because that's not true. They do, but at the quarterback position, measurables matter less than anywhere else, because the most important skills of a quarterback are pretty much in their head. They have to be able to read a defense, and they have to be able to do it quickly. It's about making quick, intelligent, good decisions. And honestly, there's no measurement for that. I mean, you can look at like completion percentage and things like that. But at the end of the day, it's very soft skills. It's not hard data evaluation. And so I feel that Scott has slipped overall in the evaluations because he doesn't look like the All-American quarterback. He's not 6'5", 240, with this huge arm who can sling it all over the place. And I'd rather have a guy who makes great decisions. And I think he's a football player. And fair. I really like that about him. I'm a sucker for the underdog.
Yeah, I kind of like McMillan for that reason too last year, just because he was lightly recruited as well. I mean, Cam seemed to take a liking to him, but
yeah,
he—it's not like he had a wealth of great offers.
Yeah, but a lot of McMillan was just chucked the ball.
Similar, that you know, really successful high school quarterbacks put up good numbers. I know Scott didn't play. I know McMillan played with that big receiver who's at I think Ole Miss.
McMillan played with us, DeMarcus
Lodge. Yeah.
Yeah. Scott didn't. I mean, I'm sure Scott obviously played with very talented players. His team won a state title, but you know he didn't play with a big time, you know, D1 prospect.
Yeah, he didn't play with a 5-star at his receiver. His success you cannot attribute to someone else.
He posted 5,000 yards by himself. Yeah. So, I mean, not by himself, but
yeah. But you don't do that by accident.
No.
And also, it's not like he did it in 2A.
No.
Like he was playing big time high school football. So I don't know. And I'm not saying he should be a 5-star and that everybody's missed on him. But at the same time, he slipped through the cracks a little bit, but he's the exact kind of guy I like who has slipped. The reasons he has fallen are the reasons I don't care about as much.
Well, and you've just reached this point where, you know, you're not gonna have, you know, you're not gonna replace a kid like Philippe Franks with another superstar. You need to get the best kid that you can get that you can count on to be around in 2018, which is when, you know, the gap kind of in the quarterback depth chart forms. I mean, assuming that Brandon Harris doesn't go, you know, just crazy next year and you know, have a shot at going to the NFL early, which, you know, I don't think even the most optimistic of us think. But
wait till you read tomorrow's column. By the time this is posted, I will have an argument that maybe he will.
He certainly got – I'll say this. He's got the arm for the NFL. There's no doubt about that.
I took some heat for suggesting that he could leave early in the comments.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably not. I mean, I'm talking about a 5% chance. But I don't want to say there's no chance of it. He's on a good developmental curve. I think people have panicked way too much about where Harris is right now, thinking that he's some terrible quarterback. Like, you'll read it, it'll be like, oh, if LSU can only find a quarterback. Harris was an above-average quarterback this year. He just wasn't very far above average. If he can – but he did that as a sophomore. If as a junior he takes another step on the developmental curve, he could be a really good quarterback.
Yeah. He's kind of at where Zach Mettenberger was, you know, after that first year.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, their passer ratings are around the same spot. Completion rates are around the same spot. You know,
the big problem with him is his completion rate is really low, and that has to get better.
I mean, it's not Anthony Jennings low, but it's
no Anthony Jennings. His completion percentage was so low, it indicates that he will never be a successful quarterback. If you're putting up a below 50% completion percentage, I'm sorry, the chances of you ever becoming an effective player are near zero. Brandon Harris is at 54%, which isn't good, but that's in the territory of many, many good quarterbacks put up a 54% in their first year start.
Yeah, we just watched one have a good season, too.
Yeah, that's the exact guy I'm going to make a comparison to, Brandon Allen.
Yeah, I think in your piece, I read it. I don't know if Billy's gotten to it, but in mine, too, he's the same guy I came back to, too. It was like the nearest, the arc that he's on, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the Brandon Allen path. And Brandon Allen was one of the best quarterbacks in college football last year, which is crazy to say. But he did everything you would want. He is my platonic ideal for an LSU quarterback.
It's funny,
of course, he played for Arkansas. But he is the perfect LSU quarterback. And Harris is on that path. So if he can just make the same progression that Allen made, LSU fans should be pretty happy next year. But the thing is, he has to make that progression.
Yeah. There's
no guarantee. And to say nothing of the fact that, you know, with the injury news, you know, and you don't want to say, well, okay, he was hurt, so therefore that excuses that the three games, the slide at the end of the year. But at the same time, that a sports hernia is certainly an injury that would have affected the Jaguars. So you can't just say, well, it doesn't matter at all. It's like, well, no, it does matter some too. So there's that. There's definitely reason to be encouraged and feel better. And he did come back and play well in the bowl game. So there's something to build on there.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's where I'm at with it. Like, I'll tweet optimism about him all day. I think he's in a good headspace now. He feels confident. He's comfortable. And now it's just growing going forward.
Yeah, receivers coming back.
The other thing next year is his receivers are finally going to be experienced. And that's going to make a huge difference. Having a junior Malachi Dupree, that's going to make a world's bit of difference.
Yeah, and if there's a guy that could make a big jump, on this offense to that next level, he's probably the most likely guy, kind of, along the same track that Juice and ODB were after the 2012 year when we were still kind of all wondering, like, okay, does this team have, like, a number one target, or are they just – two really good number twos who are a little too small, and inconsistent.
Yeah.
And, they become the best tandem of wide receivers LSU will probably ever have.
Yeah, and both
are the best in the NFL.
Yeah. We get to be teammates again in the Pro Bowl.
I'm very excited about that.
I'm not going to watch it, but very excited about it.
Yeah.
I'm happy for them.
Oh, yeah, no, you only look at the roster. You're like, oh, they made the team, and that's it.
We once convinced my wife, my good friend in college, before she was like more into football like she is now, we convinced her that the Pro Bowl was a giant banquet that all the players went to and had dinner together.
Actually, that would be better.
Yeah, I think so. I might watch that. Like if they did it like the
imagine if, like a roast.
The press, yeah.
Or, but like, what it should be is like those old TV shows, like the quarterback challenge and the lineman challenge. If they just ran a whole bunch of drills and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, that would be so much fun.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Like receiver thing, there'd be a competition who could score the most points. Like, I'd watch that.
That'd be great.
Like, let's find out who really is the strongest player in the NFL and the fastest player in the NFL and, things like that. That was one of those things that, like, they would always just say, oh, well, Darryl Green's the fastest player in the NFL or Deion Sanders is the fastest player in the NFL. It's like, no, let's have them all run a race and figure it out.
Yeah, I'm all about that.
It's like this vintage traveling home run derbies I used to do a lot more of before it became that one big event.
Yeah.
Long time ago.
Yeah,
I remember the quarterback challenge was when they would do the distance part and Brett Favre and Drew Bledsoe and John Elway would go out there and sling it 80 yards. And then Steve Young would get up there and be like all pumped up and like, and then throw it 50 yards and be like, ha, I gotcha.
Yeah. And then Steve Young was
zero chance of winning it.
And Steve Young was a better quarterback, except for John Elway. But yeah, I mean, that goes to my point about arm strength. It's just that, if we look at the actual tools, Steve Young is not one of the best quarterbacks of all time, but he was, just because he was just a fantastic player. He put it all together. He was one of those guys.
He was one of the best athletes.
Yeah, he was an amazing athlete.
Yeah, he could scramble that pass where
he could have himself. He played a different position.
Yeah, just I'm a big Steve Young fan. So,
well, hopefully
I hate him, but not because I don't like him.
But while we're talking transcendent athletes, let's just pivot this to Ben Simmons. Look at that segue, motherfuckers.
Yours was much better than mine. I was going to. Ben Simmons. So we earlier were discussing whether or not he's actually – so I think I wrote you over the weekend that maybe he's not like the transcendent talent. But I don't know that I mean that in like – that doesn't mean he's not like – unbelievably amazing.
I don't think he's a generational talent.
Yeah, I just mean he's not LeBron, but that doesn't that's
fucking no
impossible bar.
If you're saying he is not LeBron, oh well. Like, that's okay. But he has pretty much been everything that he's been reasonably billed to be. He is a really great player, and if he's not the best player in college basketball, he's certainly one of the top five.
Yeah. I think it's his talent isn't quite being like I think his talent is above what he's shown in terms of there just aren't a lot of 6 foot nine guys that can move the way he can move and do the things that he can do on the court. And I think a lot of it is I don't know why they're still having this adjustment, and that's probably a question for Johnny Jones, but if once he's been playing with guys who are used to playing with him and can kind of see what he's going to do, you'll start to see those assist numbers go up. You'll start to see him really kind of be the guy that that people think he can be. I mean, he almost broke Craig Victor's nose with a no-look pass.
Yeah.
Kind of surprised it was the first time that that happened in a game.
And, yeah, he's a terrific player. And this is where it's a kind of a shame that we have modern college basketball where everyone's one and done or two and done. If this were the 80s, and I hate to be back in my day, but this actually is why 80s college basketball was better. If he stayed for 2 or 3 years, by the time he'd be a junior, he would be amazing. Of course, he will be amazing, and when he's 2 years from now, he'll just be doing it in the NBA. And
well, and he'd have that cachet too. Like people don't know what it was like to have stars in college basketball who were just around forever.
Like a guy like Patrick Ewing or Hakeem Olajuwon is actually a great example. When he came out of Houston, his freshman year, he was incredibly raw. He had barely played basketball. And by the time he was a junior, he was amazing. I mean, just like nothing you had ever seen on a basketball court. And then, of course, he went to the NBA and made millions and millions of dollars. So if he can leave early, God bless him. This is not about holding athletes back. If they can go, go. But as a fan, you really wish they would stay for an extra year or two.
It would be great to see him a little more.
Because right now, all we get is the raw tools. And you can see that he has the raw tools to be great. He's just not great yet because he hasn't learned how to put it all together. He's just not fully developed as a basketball player because he's 18.
Yeah, well, it's no different than like Anthony Davis, which
– Yeah.
Sorry, Pelicans fans. But if you watched him in college, like he was a teardrop of the type of player that he is now. And he was he won the Naismith.
My brother would swear, my brother who watches much more basketball than I do, swore he was not going to be a successful NBA player. He thought he was soft, thought he'd get pushed around, all of these things, and will gleefully admit, like, oh no, I was so wrong.
that's just crazy talk. He was great. And look, as an LSU fan, it's great to have this talent here, but in a way, and this is the danger of it. If LSU does not make the NCAA tournament, and I still don't think they're going to make it. They're on the bubble right now, and I know people say if they're on the bubble, they're going to make it. They still need some wins, and they need to beat some good teams in order to make it. But if they do not make the tournament, no top 100 recruit is ever going to play for LSU and Johnny Jones. Here's my point. Huge. We have to make the tournament, or else we have wasted Ben Simmons.
Like, my thing is, if you're Johnny Jones, and this is what you do for a living, and if Ben Simmons truly is, this is the best player you're ever going to recruit, no matter how many other five-star, special athletes you get, they're not going to be Ben Simmons. They're not going to be considered this generational talent, would have been the number one pick out of high school, so on and so forth. If you can't get that kid to the tournament, is coaching what you need to be doing? This is the question I think you need to be asking yourself. Am I in the right line of work?
Particularly in a weak conference, because the SEC is not good.
Yeah.
It's not like he's trying to – you look at the Big Ten, it's not like he's trying to run through the Big Ten right now. Where there's
and it's not like LSU played a hard out-of-conference schedule either.
Yeah, and we lost to some bad teams.
Charleston.
Yeah, God, it's just
– and got – destroyed by them too. It wasn't like he showed up and lost a heartbreaker.
The LSU basketball team, for as much excitement as, and also let's you brought in Blakeney as well. Like there were two big recruits in this class,
and getting Craig Victor eligible. And Craig Victor,
you had three big names that came in. There is no reason this team should not, in modern college basketball, should not at least be a tournament team. And I'm not a big fire the coach guy, but if they don't make the tournament, I'm kind of with Billy. You have to seriously look on whether this guy can be the coach, because this is the most amount of talent he will ever have.
And honestly, here's the thing: the way basketball works with the tournament, like say this team wins, I don't know what the remaining games are, but say they finish about 12-5 in the SEC. if they find a way to beat Oklahoma this weekend and they can at least get to the that win total, they will be in.
Like, yeah,
I'm confident
if they beat Oklahoma, they're sitting pretty.
My question will still be, okay, but you didn't really improve that much over the court, like in terms of record, with dramatically better players than what you had the year before. Well, so, you know, okay, they make a run to the Sweet 16. Okay, well, that's great, but flukes happen in the tournament. I'm not impressed.
Yeah, but if you make the Sweet 16, it changes everything. You win two games, well, three if you're in the play-in game. But let's just assume you win two games and suddenly you're a Sweet 16 game, a team, and they sprinkle Magic Sweet 16 dust on your team, and you're remembered as a much better team than you ever were.
And that's kind of what I'm getting at. It's like that doesn't matter to me just as much. It's like, and by the same token, if this team had just burned through the regular season, was just blowing teams out, and look, you get a bad draw, you lose earlier than you should in the tournament, I don't put as much weight on it, I guess. Like, it's like, look, fluky things happen in the tournament. I can deal with that.
Show me
what you can do during the regular season.
And I think people get judged on the postseason, fairly or unfairly, which is probably unfairly. You're judged by what you do in the tournament. Yeah, not getting there is a disaster, but if he gets there, if LSU limps into the tournament and then makes the Sweet 16, I swear to God, all is forgiven. And I don't say, I'm not saying that's right, but that's what will happen.
I think you're right in terms of that is how it will be perceived, but my questions will remain.
Yeah, if they had just beat NC State last year, he'd probably be on a little more solid standing as far as his potential for being fired.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And not just that they lost, it's how they lost.
Yeah, it was, yes.
He's just not a good in-game coach.
He's not.
And you watch him play. LSU plays disorganized basketball. They don't know how to find an open look. It's just there's no pace to the game. Like, they can never make up their mind whether they want to push pace or play half court. It's just all over the place.
And I feel like at this point in the season, we shouldn't be, hey, Ben's got the ball, let's everybody watch and see what he does.
Yeah. Right. There is no identity. Basically, the identity is they watch Ben and then Horns, maybe get Hornsby an open look in the corner. Like, those are the two. It's only one play, but it has two results because sometimes Ben will kick it out. Like, it's, and you have a wild card like Quarterman who just, someone needs to sit that guy down and just be like, play within yourself. I mean, he makes some great plays, but he is so out of control almost all the time he's on the court.
And it's weird because he didn't look like that last year. It's like he somehow regressed a little bit.
He has really regressed as a player. There's like there's just no art to his game anymore. He's just wildly flailing about, and you just want to be, it's like, you've got talent. Just play, and you're not the best player on the team. You've got Ben Simmons. Just play within yourself. You'll get looks. Ben will find you. And he just, every time he gets the ball, he acts like this is the last time he's ever going to see it. And he makes these wild runs to the basket. It's just completely out of control. And that's actually something that I think really points to coaching, is how much Quarterman has regressed and doesn't play within any sort of team concept.
And while I understand that, you know, these kids aren't going to play together like they're, you know, NBA veterans and know how, you know, all of each other's moves and all that kind of stuff, it's like, this isn't early in the season anymore. You guys should have a little more rhythm to, you know, what Ben wants to do, what you want to do in certain sets, you know, just how to play together. You know, that shouldn't still be something they're still trying to figure out, I guess, at this point, it feels like.
Yeah, and then, you know, you contrast it with, since I follow the gymnastics team, and since, you know, give them a plug, you can kind of see that this is a team that's early on, which is really struggling with their identity because they have a lot of youth on the team. They at least know their identity. Like, they know that Ashley Natt, she is the anchor of the team. And even if she has a bad rotation, she tends to have a bad one every meet so far, they at least know that this is the person they're relying on. They're working up to that. And some of their lower scores that they've put up have been because they're still working on things. So there's still this identity of like what they do well. It's like, this is a team that's going to attack the floor. They're going to try and win on the bars, and they're going to be one of the few teams that actually goes after the beam, which is, you know, the apparatus from hell.
Yeah.
And so even though
it seems like they've got some girls that will try some more difficult routines on the beam this year.
Yeah, and it seems that even though they're struggling a little bit, and I don't want to say they're struggling a ton, but they're struggling a little bit, they have an identity. So I'm not as worried about what's going to happen in the postseason. LSU basketball, they're struggling a little bit, but I don't see any identity. I don't know what they're working towards. I don't see that end point of like, this is what the team's going to look like in a month. I just don't even know. What is the ideal of this team?
Dare we even discuss that the man that hired Johnny Jones and also hired Nicky Vargas tried to fire our very successful football coach?
God, man. I don't want to touch that.
I don't know.
I don't know how he survives the year. I really don't.
It seems like he can't be on anything but thin ice, right?
Yeah. I mean,
he already wasn't popular with the natives. But I don't know if that – I mean, like you always say, no one likes the accountant.
Yeah, no one likes the accountant. And
LSU's AD exists to be hated.
Yeah, I am okay with that. Like, I was not one of the ones who piles on him. Like, his job is to extort money out of us. Like, we're the fans, and his job is to monetize LSU sports. And he's been really good at that. And no one likes the accountant, but that's his job. But he also has the job of hiring coaches and – you look at the results, the only coaching hire that's really worked out well for him, he fell into Bass Ackwards. Yeah. Beth Tarina hire.
Yeah.
It's all been very strange. Because, you know, I do think it's one and I have the reputation of being the guy who apologizes for Joe. And I'm not apologizing for Joe. But I'm gonna say, you know, what happened on the situation. And let's make one thing really clear. It was made clear by Dale Brown, by all those people, that Johnny Jones needed to be the coach.
No, I agree. And
you're totally right.
Not to say that, well, Joe gets no blame in it, but look, you know, he was strongly encouraged.
He was all but forced, yes.
After Trent Johnson, when it was very much, you know, oh yeah, see, you went and got the outsider. And he couldn't do squat here. So now you're going
to
hire
credit him. On paper, Trent Johnson looked like a good hire.
It really did.
Oh, absolutely.
And so did Nicky Vargas.
Conference coach of the year in two separate conferences and somehow couldn't do anything right here.
And it wasn't just that they lost. It was that they played really boring basketball. You can lose and still keep the crowd if you're playing an exciting brand of basketball. But to lose and be slow and ugly – it was a deathly combination. And mainly I think Oliva's thing is that he was in a clear open power struggle with Les Miles, and he just lost. And normally the loser of power struggles don't get to stick around the next year. And this isn't of a does he deserve to get fired. It's like The Unforgiven. Deserve ain't got nothing to do with it.
Well, that's true in college sports, period.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. I'm curious as how much of things. I mean, how much of the whole thing was Joe, and how much of it were boosters with big mouths who have been waiting since the Tennessee game in 2005, the BCS game, being ready to tell everybody, you know, basically to go on Tiger Droppings and tell the world, I told you Les Miles was always a moron and that we should have fired him originally. And now I'm right 10 years later.
I think that's a big thing. The boosters have resented being put in a corner where they were put in by Saban 15 years ago. And they've been trying to claw out of that corner ever since. And they finally showed their heads again, and Les just whacked them down like whack-a-mole. But yeah, this was entirely about the boosters trying to exert their influence back over the program. And
didn't work out. I'll say this. A friend of mine, you know, that's pretty well connected, you know, not that I hate to play the sauces card too much, but the best sign, I think, for, I guess, the relationship improving was the way the Dave Aranda hire happened quickly and quietly.
Yes.
It lasted about a day. It was Les and his, you know, his circle of, you know, Frank Wilson and Ogeron and Dean Dingman and Austin Thomas. Okay, who do we want? Went to Joe. This is who we want. Said, go get him. You know, whatever, however much money it takes. Boom, it was done. No leaks. You know, I mean, I put Aranda's name on a thing because I knew they had talked to him last year. And I was like, oh, yeah, he'd be a good hire. I didn't necessarily think it was because that was who it was going to be. And all of a sudden, pff, and it was – I'll never forget. I think I was watching some bowl game sitting in my bed in my house with a laptop working on something. I was like, oh, well, I got to write up a thing because we hired a defensive coordinator. Oh, shit.
Yeah, I was at the ranch. I didn't have an internet connection. It just came on my phone. And I was like, all right, good news. But and also, if you contrast it to the previous year, because I know Dan and I were both very unhappy with how the defensive coordinator hire went the year before. Forget about getting Steele, just the process of hiring Steele. This was the complete opposite. Hiring Aranda, and we went over this last week, it was like a different school how they went about the hiring process of Aranda. Everything worked, yeah, like clockwork. And I think that does show that they are working together better. So if Oliva's going to save his job, it's by doing that, by asking
that. And I think they're cutting out a lot of the loose lips from November.
And they look chummy together. I mean, I know that both are seasoned pros at doing just that, but they do look chummy. I mean, at their random press conference and stuff, like they were joking and stuff like that. So maybe whatever.
Intense circumstances have a way of making people realize that, you know, even if it's just, look, we have to get along for the betterment of the whole enterprise. You know, hey, sometimes you do it.
And look, Les
won. And you so find out that you actually like each other a little bit.
You know, like Les won. He can be magnanimous. It's pretty easy. You know, when you're holding hand, it's pretty easy for you to be like, all right, we can all be chummy. I don't think Les is going to push the point. I don't think he's going to the board of supervisors saying this guy needs to go. I think
Les has no interest in that. Les he wants to coach football.
Yeah, he doesn't like any of that stuff. He hated the fact that he was
coach football and go home to his family.
Yeah, I think that's very true.
Yeah, totally agree.
You know, he wants to have the resources that he needs. He doesn't want to have to fight for them. He doesn't want to politic. I mean, it was one thing that was relayed to me during the whole thing is that was part of, you know, the whole booster issue was Les had never been the guy to go and court the big name boosters and you know, quote unquote, forge relationships and be friends so that when this happened, those guys were willing to say, well, no, I won't give the money because Les is my friend and I want to be the coach. Like, he didn't do that because he wasn't interested in that. He just wanted to coach and do his job. And, you know, I can definitely identify with that.
All right. So I think
I was waiting for Poser to have some other great transition.
Oh, yeah. I actually wanted to say segue, motherfucker, again.
Yeah, but, that's what I was hoping.
How about this? Back to recruiting. Who, you know, to get off of just the strictly Lindsey Scott discussion, who are your favorite recruits in this class so far?
That's a good question.
I can tell you mine. Mine's easy.
Mine's Divinity. We need a linebacker. He's a stud linebacker. I'm in love with the guy.
Had a great senior season.
I tend not to – and also – I warn everybody about falling in love with one guy, unless he's Leonard Fournette.
Well,
I like to look at the whole class, and you know, I hate to single out one guy because one of the last recruits I fell in love with was Craig Lawston, and he turned out to be a good player, but not a great one. So, you can't fall in love with a recruit too much. But man, we needed Divinity so badly in this class. He can play right away. We need a linebacker. We have almost no depth there. That was a huge get.
I like Rashard Lawrence, and it's more just the fit of him in the school because if you took his name off his highlights, you could have told me they were Glenn Dorsey's or they were Drake Nevis's or they were just about any LSU tackle because it's like the prototype. It's like he's under six three or shorter, you know, not the big giant guy, not the John Henderson or the Michael Brockers type. He's LSU, you know, parlance. But just that kind of fire hydrant defensive tackle who is just everywhere running everything down, and it's, you know, the Booger Henry Thomas to Booger McFarland to Chad Lavallee to Kyle Williams to Glenn Dorsey to Drake Nevis, you know, so on up the line. It's like, yep, no, pretty much. Like I think I joked to a friend. It's like there should be a state law that if you're built like that and you play like that, you should have to come to LSU.
I like that. He does fit the image really well. I like Thornton.
It's like every defensive tackle that we've had, pretty much.
He really does. And, you know, we'll see whatever Aranda wants to do, if he's going to shift to – I mean, we've discussed this before. It's probably too much being made out of the whole 3-4 or 4-3 thing. Like, Aranda strikes me as a guy that's just going to do whatever's best with his personnel, and he'll make it work. So I'm not too worried about – maybe his ideal is a 3-4, but if it is, he'll do it more like a one-gap system, something like what Wade Phillips does. And a guy like Lawrence, even though he's not the biggest like tank guy that should be a classic 3-4 guy like people say all the time, he'll play fine in it.
Well, Lockettier is kind of a pretty good two-gap tackle, so he could be kind of that nose type of guy. But at the end of the day, you just get your players and kind of figure it out, you know. And if you take what we did last year and you stand up Arden Key, and oh, it's a 3-4.
Yeah.
But did you really change anything? I mean, you just stood a guy up.
Yeah.
So
you know, and Alabama, for as much as they're a quote unquote 3-4 team, I think they'd probably tell you they play a 4-man line
all the time
more than anything else. Because when you're in a nickel, you usually have four defensive linemen.
Yep.
And almost every team you face will make you play nickel for most of your snaps.
So who are you in love with, Dan?
I like Thornton. I almost forgot the N. I'm a huge edge rush guy. Like I love Arden Key was my guy last year, as I gushed about him on the site all the time. Mm-hmm. So Thornton is kind of my guy. Or Andre Anthony could be that guy too, but Thornton's the one I've kind of zeroed in on.
Andre Anthony seems like the guy that Ed Orgeron got on and was like, yeah, no, and he was a nobody, and he became a somebody really quick when people started watching him play.
Yeah, I remember this was back preseason. I was like a much more negative person, but I Anthony, we got his commitment, and we got Caleb Roddy, and I was like, I just don't know about these kids, and it's like, shame on me. Not that star ratings mean everything, but if you followed them over the past several months, like, the services picked up on them and were like, oh, these guys are really good. And then they go to their respective games and dominate, you know. And
yeah,
it's clearly just really Orgeron can evaluate and knows a good player when he sees one. So he doesn't give a shit if it's a 3-star or whatever.
I mean, Orgeron's I'm the guy, and this was, you know, this summer when I was the quote-unquote the skeptic on Auburn. I shouldn't say quote-unquote. I was a skeptic on Auburn. You know, and I would say, like, look, I'm not going to say, oh, well, that coach is involved, so therefore it's going to work out, because coaches make mistakes. When it comes to defensive linemen, Ed Orgeron don't make a lot of mistakes. I mean, I'm sure they've happened, but if he likes a defensive lineman at that position with him, okay.
Yeah, it comes in, what is your skill set? And Ed Orgeron's skill set is evaluation of defensive linemen prospects and then getting them to sign. Like, I trust him at that. Like, if Ed Orgeron was our defensive coordinator and they were talking about what a great, you know, defensive secondary we're going to have just because we had Ed Orgeron, okay, I'd have some questions. But this is a guy who just – he has a very simple philosophy of just get to the quarterback. He creates pressure. And if you look at how quickly he improved – the tackles for a loss and sacks on this team, where Chavis played a fairly passive defense where they didn't rush the quarterback. They played more contained. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It was just a different philosophy. Orgeron went back to, let's put as much pressure on as possible, but he was also really good at identifying talent. And I mean, it doesn't take a genius to find Arden Key, but it takes a great guy to close on Arden Key and get him to come.
Well, and yeah.
I'll say this for Arden Key. It doesn't feel like his recruitment, given like what we think about him now, that's like, oh no, he could be special. Like, I don't remember that kind of hype. Like, he was well hyped, but it wasn't no. He's, you know, he could be, you know, a first round draft for a top 10 draft pick.
No
in
way.
A couple of years.
Yeah, he's a top 100 guy.
Dan, give Dan his props. Dan thought that, but
yeah, no. It
wasn't the consensus.
I remember thinking going to the year that he was going to start, but that was mainly because Dan had poisoned the well on me. Like, he really hyped this guy. So yeah, Dan, you know, and also look, Dan has a pretty good track record of when he points out one guy, because the previous guy he pointed out, like, this guy is going to be special, was Tyrann Mathieu. So, you know, well done.
I try. I'm sure I that's always been a, like, because when I do those Better Know a Freshman, I always do those little summaries. I want to go back and, like, read them all and then just sort of chart it, like, my hit and miss rate or how accurate I was.
Oh, God. I don't want to do that for mine. I still remember I was convinced that Josh Boutte would be.
Oh, I liked him too. Yeah,
and he was. He finally started this past year, and he got benched for a freshman really quick.
And he could be back in the mix next year. I mean,
yeah, who knows? They could move some guys around.
But yeah, it's not.
I was right on Ethan Posick, not playing center, but I thought he would be really good at something.
Yeah. About to wrap up recruiting season. We'll do that next week, and we'll have the signing day. And
yeah, should we do a signing day podcast?
Yeah, we'll do a signing day, but maybe that night we'll wrap it up.
Yeah,
we're not going to do it live. That's just crazy.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh no, I'm already signing day is the busiest. It's the day I always say, like, oh, I'll get my friends together and I'll go to a bar and I'll bring my laptop and I can do work from the bar. And I won't be talking to anybody because I will be working and commenting and posting stories. And
yeah, so we'll do something that night, but that'll be next week. We'll cover signing day. We're about to wrap it up. So we're about to enter into a dead period of sports. So y'all are trying to convince me that I should be watching wrestling. And actually, the best sales pitch I've gotten for it so far was that jackass who jumped into your mentions to call us all a bunch of nerds because you guys were talking wrestling.
Oh my god!
And here's the crazy thing: is I was at a hockey game, so I'm not even really paying attention to Twitter. And I come home, and my phone has like 30 notifications. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And it's just this one angry sports radio show host who has like 10 listeners who apparently was mad that you guys were treating wrestlers, but then like dragged me into it. And I'm like, what the fuck did I do?
I don't even know who the guy is. Like, and I live in Baton Rouge and listen to Baton Rouge radio. And I don't
so know now is. I kind of want to watch wrestling just to piss that guy off. So you caught me at a good time. So it's time for my primer on pro wrestling. You guys have the floor. Convince me that I should be watching this shit.
Dan, you go first.
Okay. No pressure.
No pressure.
I didn't know that.
Well, I know I will not be able to convince him to watch it.
Yeah, I didn't know that I was can, my...
Now, what do you like about it? Let's sit back.
Yeah, I can tell you what I like about it and why I think it's a valid art form.
Yeah.
I can't make you like it.
Okay.
Yeah. That was my take. I wasn't coming into this thinking I'm going to make a convert here.
Okay.
Really, so wrestling appeals in so many different levels, and it's a strange thing. There's a nostalgia aspect, 100%. I liked it as a kid. Poser, I always want to call you Poser. It's Poser.
It's Poser.
I know you've talked about you did not like it as a kid, and I think that plays a huge part for anyone.
Because absolutely
I think
it's does.
Much harder to jump into it sight unseen as an adult and be like, this is something, you know? So there's a nostalgia factor. That's part of it. If you want to get into you could go into all the brands. I like mentioned something to you in the DMs about Lucha Underground, and that's almost not even wrestling. It's way different. But let's just talk about WWE because I think it's easier.
Yeah.
It's much more palatable. It's much more accessible too. So why do I like it? I like personally the sort of game within a game. Obviously, I'm well aware that it's fake. That's the number one thing people say all the time. You know it's fake, right? Like, yeah, no shit. I'm
I wasn't going to bring that
up. It's not fake. It's work and choreographed.
Yeah. Okay. It's scripted, actually.
Don't do the moves to each other because that will not work out well.
That's very true. So
you will cause brain damage to people. As someone who has DDT'd one of his best friends many times.
So, I mean, and beyond that, it's like sort of, there's part of it that appeals to sort of your baser instincts. Like, I know you've talked about before, like, yeah, part of the reason we like football is because it's fucking violent. Like, wrestling is violent, so that appeals to people. And there's a lot of athleticism involved. Most of the acting is pretty corny and over the top, but that's okay. I'm down for that. Like, I don't mind camp and cheese and zaniness at all. But there's also, like, it's created this whole other world of like, this is the rumor of what's going to happen, and this guy's going to do this, and this guy's going to do that. And then it's like seeing if they follow through and seeing if there's truth to it or how they do it, which I find very interesting.
So do you follow like wrestling websites before you watch the show? Like there's a big chatter, like there's a Reddit for wrestling?
Yeah, absolutely.
There's an SB Nation wrestling site.
There is. There's
a Bayside Beats.
Yep. And it's... And they devote, like, entire columns just to rumors in the industry. Like, they have a daily column about what are the main rumors going on in the industry right now. And I mean, I'm interested in it on that level. And of course, I like watching it when it's on, too. It's not like I, you know, read about it and then go read summaries of what happened. I mean, I find it enjoyable as programming, too. Not all of it. There's parts of it that are just gloriously terrible. But, I mean, depending on who you ask, most of it is gloriously terrible. It also, I see the attitudes towards it are a lot like most LSU fans. Like, they're so miserable watching it. It's like, why are you watching this if it pisses you off so bad? People just tweet about it. They're like, this is fucking stupid. It's so terrible. I'm like, what? Then why are you watching it?
I don't understand. That's the funny thing is because, like, on Twitter, I follow a lot of people who are wrestling fans because college football Twitter has a big crossover with wrestling Twitter. And every so often, my timeline will just go crazy with wrestling tweets. And I swear, it's about every time, like 75, 80% of them are always like, this is the worst one ever. And I'm like, are you kidding me, people? I almost enjoy not watching and just reading Twitter.
Well, that's half the fun. That's me with award shows. I don't actually want to watch the award show. I just want to listen to Twitter. But with wrestling, there's a nostalgia aspect. I didn't watch it as like a young kid. I got more into it more in like middle school. And then, of course, high school for me was like the prime, the Monday Night Wars, when it was, you know, became the thing, you know, in pop culture and with Stone Cold Steve Austin and, you know, The Rock.
I know who Stone Cold Steve Austin is. I don't live under a rock, all right?
No, you probably don't know what the Monday Night Wars are.
Rock and so on and so forth. Anyway, what in my later years, I've learned to appreciate it from a performance aspect in that the match does have a setup. It does have a flow. You know, there are acts to it. There's the opening act, and then there's, you know, act two is usually when, you know, the villain or the heel, you know, in parlance.
Heels and faces, once again, not a total idiot. I know how this works.
Well, there's what they call the heat segment, where the heel works the crowd up as like, ha, watch me get the upper hand through, you know, underhanded tactics and beat the shit out of your hero. And then there's the big comeback at the end, and then there's the finish. And sometimes, depending on what they want with the, you know, how the match fits in the grand scheme thing, sometimes the heel wins because he's going on to bigger and better things, and the good guy's just there to help make him look good. And sometimes it's the other way around. The good guy's going on to bigger, better things, and the heel's just there to help him look good. And, you know, the performance aspects of it that I've learned to watch, like, the, you know, guys' abilities to take something that looks so stupid and make it look like it just murdered you in the face versus the things that actually do murder you in the face that go unwatched. You know, I mean, being at WrestleMania 30 and, you know, one of the big spots in the match that ended with the wonderfully triumphant, a story that even you could have gotten into, Poser, where Daniel Bryan, the undersized,
scrappy
giant.
Oh yeah, no, I have to admit, even by not watching wrestling, I like Daniel Bryan. I know his story. Once again, you guys have ruined me. Like, I do read all the tweets on this, so it's just like, I don't watch wrestling, but I kind of know what's going on because of y'all. Daniel Bryan would totally be my favorite wrestler. Let's not even kid ourselves.
Plus, he also kind of looks like Zach a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
There was a point in that match where the two bad guys who were in the match with him combined their two finishing moves to put him through the announce table. And in the way it happened, you could see that one of them, like, they had forgotten to pull all the TV monitors out of the table. And you could see that he landed, and it was like, oh, he landed flush on this TV monitor, like this metal TV monitor right in the square part of his back. And you saw him roll over with this giant red welt. And it wasn't supposed to happen. Like, it wasn't part of the thing. They were supposed to be okay through this, and the other guy was supposed to be hurt. And this guy, Randy Orton, clearly took the worst end of it. And it was like, yeah, and he's got to keep up and act like, and not necessarily act like it didn't hurt, because obviously they sell it, but still, it's like, he's got to get up and keep going.
Yeah. Well, he's got to get up and act like he just kicked someone's ass, not like he just got his ass kicked.
Yeah.
I told this point to Dan offline. One of the things I do like about wrestling is it reminds me a lot of British pantomime, which is children's theater in England. And when I lived over there, I really enjoyed going over that. And it's basically like the very over-the-top acting, you know, where someone goes in the room and everyone's like, look behind you, or don't go in there. Like a really audience participation, and like the actors, you know, stumble around, and it's all overacting, and the kids get to yell, and it's just a blast. Wrestling is almost like the American version of British children's theater. And I mean that as a compliment, because I love British pantomime. I think it's freaking outstanding. And if I'm flipping through the channels, if I'm just kind of like channel surfing, because I still own cable because I'm old, so fuck you, you millennial bastards trying to take that from me. If I'm flipping through the channels and I see wrestling guys talking, like if they're not wrestling, if there's a guy with a microphone in those really short shorts in a ring, I will stop down and watch it because that is entertainment. But as soon as they start wrestling, I kind of lose all interest.
Well, I would hope my Ric Flair promos over the years have resonated a little bit.
Ric Flair, I was a big fan of Jake the Snake and the Snake Pit as a little kid. Yeah. You know, kind of stuff. Like, I love when they're at the microphone talking about, like, you know, I'm going to kill you and rip your arms off. And, like, I love the conversations they have on the microphone. They're so over the top, and the storylines. That stuff I find really fun. I get that, because it's sort of like Dan was saying. It's so over the top, and, you know, it's cheesy, but it's kind of enjoyable because there's no subtlety to it whatsoever. It's just...
Well, but there is, because you learn – when you watch good ones versus bad ones, you learn that there's an art. Because at the end of the day, the idea of the promo is I want you, when this is over, to want to either buy this match on pay-per-view or tune in or buy a ticket or whatever.
Yeah.
So you can't make your opponent sound too bad, because you've got to make him sound like he might be able to beat you. You know, like – you can't give away the ending of the match. You have to. There really is like it, for me, it's impressive to watch the ones who are really good at it, and then see the ones who are really bad at it. Like, oh, well, that's why he's really good.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, and that's how come like The Rock was able to parlay a wrestling career into being an action movie star, because it really is a really
bad, and he just has charisma that you can't.
And that's a related skill. It's all about charisma. It's selling yourself to the audience. It's being able to say, hey, you know,
he may just be a superior human being to us all.
He really is. Like, let's be honest. He truly is. He
played defensive tackle over Warren Sapp at the U.
Yeah.
Ed Ogeron, he got half his catchphrases from Ed Ogeron.
That's awesome. I didn't know.
Oh, yeah. Ed Ogeron was the defensive line coach at Miami.
And the other thing is, I was every year I go to a rock festival in Austin, Fun Fest, because it's not as big as ACL and you can actually stand around. It's during the fall, so the weather's nicer, and it's just a nicer scene. But what they have added is underground wrestling. And so it's like so they will set up a wrestling ring, and it's by the punk rock stage. So I like to stand there. So I'll listen to like Black Flag while guys wrestle. And I have to say, watching live wrestling from literally the ringside, like holding the ropes, was some of the most entertaining things I have ever done. Because not only the guy, and this is clearly like it's amateur hour. I mean, these guys are not professionals or anything like that. But still, they're working the crowd, and they're telling everybody, and they're, you know,
they're telling a story.
They're telling a story, and also I love the fact that the heel like got everybody so riled up that the entire crowd was chanting, like, you know, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. And he's just getting the thing going. And it was really an expert way, because we went into it not knowing who the heel and who the face were. Like, and everybody was all tatted up and, like, you know, wearing, you know, screw your mother t-shirts kind of stuff. So it was hard to tell who the bad guy was. But it really came through in the performance, like who was the bad guys and stuff like that, and who you're supposed to root for. And everybody got into it. And there was sort of like this herd mentality that was fun to be a part of. I have to admit that I know Dan said he's coming down to Dallas for WrestleMania. I do see the appeal of live wrestling, but I don't know if it would work at an arena level. Part of what made it work is that I was right next to it. And I don't know.
Well, that's where the rise in talent level kind of, I think, it comes into play, is that the guys that you're watching in the big arenas, in theory anyway, are dramatically better at what they're doing than what
the
guy you're seeing.
Yeah.
But I think what you speak to too is there's a whole, there's, I mean, now WWE is going about trying to basically poach all of these companies, but in the last probably 10 years, there's been a huge rise in the indie wrestling scene that's like non-WWE, and they play a lot more of those like tiny little concert halls and, you know, 500 seat kind of things. That's yeah. probably a, they, and they identify with that closer human connection that WWE just yeah. simply and, cannot offer.
And it kind of goes to like my musical taste, but I think I actually enjoy the smaller, not quite as talented scene better because it's more immediate. I don't think I would enjoy the big glitzy glam of a WWE WrestleMania event. I would actually prefer seeing like 300 people in a ballroom, like while these guys, you know, in, you know, Mexican wrestling masks go after each other, and you know.
So he probably needs to watch Lucha Underground.
I told him this on DM, and I like, I think you should watch like 5 episodes of Lucha Underground and see if it strikes any chord at all.
I honestly think I would enjoy that more than.
And that one gets more like, I guess, kind of over the top. Like,
yeah,
it's ridiculous, but it's ridiculous on purpose.
Yeah,
it's like a self-aware. Like, it's kind of like a Robert Rodriguez kind of like, where it's like, yes, this is crazy and stupid and silly, but it should be, and you should have fun, and it's okay.
He's the executive producer, so.
Oh, yeah. I actually didn't know he actually had a connection to it.
Yeah, he's the executive producer of it. I don't know what creative role he played, but he funded it, I guess.
Yeah, he put some money up.
Yeah, I think, you know, I would enjoy the Lucha Underground more than straight WWE.
Yeah.
Once again, we go back to my, like what I like in recruits, I'm a sucker for the underdog. So I think I would like the smaller, more immediate.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, if I'm making a final pitch to you at all, wrestling is storytelling at some level. And it happens successfully.
When it's successful, it's really successful. It's really
good. That's a good way to say it. It doesn't, and especially at WWE level, it's not always the most successful thing in the world. But I think it hits back at like the whole fictional storytelling line that a lot of people identify with. You need something to sort of latch onto and believe in, and it gives you that.
You know, the example I'll give, I've been to 2 WrestleManias, and at WrestleMania 25, Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker. That is the match I would point to and say, okay, watch that. And if you don't, and if by the end of that, you're not like riveted as to who's going to win and, you know, what all this is going towards, you know, okay, then it's not for you. I was at the 2003 Sugar Bowl. I've watched LSU win national championships. I watched the Saints clinch the Super Bowl and, you know, hugged my dad, who had had season tickets longer than he'd had me as a son. When that was up there, right up there with those events in terms of everybody in that building was just, oh my God, what is happening? This is the most amazing thing ever. Just their feet waiting to see what was going to happen next. Kind of event, to the point where they had that match and then they still had a couple other matches after it. No one cared about the matches after it because that match was so good. Or I was just like I think by the end of the night, the main event got boring chance.
Yeah, it was just everyone was spent.
Everyone had just put so much, you know, emotional energy into that
match. I think what the turnoff for me is, and this happened in the late 90s with a lot of stuff, it was that everything became extreme.
Yes.
And everything became edgy. And like WWE, which really still WWF back then, where you kind of had faces and, you know, and heels. And I wasn't a big fan, but I still kind of got it. It kind of became heels and even worse heels. And I don't know. And like the whole, and I don't know how the whole trajectory worked, but like the Hulk Hogan NWO thing, just don't turn Hulk Hogan to a villain. Like, that's just stupid. And like that kind of stuff kind of bothered me.
Oh, but somehow he was good at being a bad guy.
He was the best. That's the best Hulk Hogan.
Oh, yeah, you wanted to see him get his ass kicked so bad.
And like it just became like this thing where it's just like everything has just got to be the most extreme thing. And to me, that's what ruined a lot of, you know, it ruined comic books in that era. I think it completely turned me off of wrestling, even though I was never a huge wrestling fan. I was at least aware of it. Completely turned me off of it as that. It's just, there's nothing I hate more.
And that's a good point. And that kind of, I had kind of my period where I went away from wrestling. It's kind of like, it's 2002, and it's like, yeah, no, it's not 1998. I don't like that anymore. Like, you know, and it kind of, I had my time where I kind of didn't watch it as much, and then kind of came back because some of the guys that I appreciated for different reasons were more, you know, back in the spotlight a few years later.
It kind of goes to, like, and this isn't, you know, we'll take it into a more pop, it's what bothers me about the Zack Snyder Superman films. Yes, I'm going to compare wrestling to Superman. Ugh. All right, yeah.
No, that totally
not
works.
Not the comparison.
Yeah, but Zack it is. Snyder. But yeah, Zack Snyder, this is the thing. It's like, Superman is the ultimate heroic figure in American pop culture. Like, he is as good gets. And the Zack Snyder film turned him into, like, this angsty killer. And it was, that's not Superman. And it really bothered me. Like, on a level that I didn't think it would, because I'm not even that big of a Superman fan. It just really, it was a total misunderstanding of the character. And I think wrestling kind of went through that same period with me, where everything was so angsty and vicious and mean. There was nothing, like, you need faces. Like, heels are great, and everyone talks about how great heels are, and they're kind of the ones who get remembered a little bit better long term, but you can't have a heel without a hero. And the turning away from heroes really bothered me about wrestling in general. And honestly, that's what I like about The Rock, or even when we go back to Daniel Bryan. Like, he's the underdog. Like, Daniel Bryan is about as, you know, face as you can get. Like, and I think that's something that you need in an art form, is you need to understand what it is that makes your art form good. And you can subvert the trope if you know the tropes, but if all you're doing is subverting the trope, after a while that becomes its own trope. And
well, you can subvert the trope when you have the right performer, because that's what kind of what The Rock did. Was The Rock was very much this kind of, he started off, he went by, you know, a different name, and he was this white bread, goody goody, all American, yay, and everybody booed him just because.
Yeah.
Like, not for any good reason. And that was kind of what transitioned him into becoming The Rock, and he started referring to himself in the third person, and I'm the, you know, he was pitched as, hey, this guy's the next big talent, you know, coming up. And he's like, yeah, I'm the next big talent. I'm better than everybody. And he became a bad guy, but he became such an entertaining bad guy that he then became a good guy again, because everybody was just going to cheer for him anyway. So you might as well make him a good guy.
Yeah, and
he would start doing the catchphrases, and he would stop and go, hey, this ain't Sing Along with the Champ Night, the crowd, because they were just repeating everything he was saying. And it was great. Like, his way of trying to say, like, you're not supposed to cheer me, morons. And it just didn't work. You know?
And I'm not going to ever make an argument that The Rock is not great, because he is one of the most personable, charismatic stars.
He's on that list of celebrities who you think if you ever met him, you just want to give him a big hug.
Yeah.
You're like, you're just awesome.
Yeah, and honestly, like, Vin Diesel's kind of on that level as well. Like, I think he'd be a guy that would just be fun to have a beer with. Like, but
absolutely.
The Rock is just, he's definitely the guy, if you're a wrestling fan and you're trying to pitch it to a non-wrestling fan, The Rock is definitely exhibit A. You're like, this guy, wrestling created this. And that's really appealing, because he's such an over-the-top personality. He's a lot of fun. I find no fault in The Rock.
What's interesting is, in the current wrestling landscape, he's kind of out of place, because he is so big and over-the-top. And yes, I know wrestling is kind of always big and over-the-top, but they're sort of angling on realism in this era. Like, you have Brock Lesnar, who is like a legitimate freak, ridiculous
scary,
athlete.
Bad human who will murder us all.
Can actually hurt people kind of person. And he's one of your biggest stars. So it's like The Rock comes in and he's like everything fun and cartoony about wrestling. He's totally wrestling. But Brock is like also totally wrestling, but in a more serious sort of sporty way. if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no. Because wasn't Lesnar like an actual wrestler, like Greco Roman?
Yes, he was the NCAA heavyweight champion. They have a couple of guys who have been, you know, Kurt Angle, who won a gold medal in Atlanta in 96. And then there's another thing, the guy who came in and was like, he's the All-American Kurt Angle who won gold medals, and everybody booed him. So they played up that, like, basically, like, yes, I won gold medals, and I'm better than you, and you should try to be like me, and make him a bad guy that way. And it just, you know, like I said, sometimes that just works with
God. Doesn't that say a lot about audiences? We're terrible.
I mean,
we're just awful. It's like someone comes up and is just like, look, I have accomplished actual things. And it was like, boo, you suck. Stop reminding me of my own inadequacies.
And that's the other advantage of going to wrestling shows, is you will always feel like the most sophisticated member of the audience.
It's very true. I hate to insult wrestling fans, but it's an experience.
Oh, I'll insult wrestling fans. I insult LSU fans all the time. We're idiots. It's okay.
It's true.
Look, the fans
are awful people.
Look, people in general are idiots. I'm sorry, they are. You know, it's individuals are very smart. If you run into an individual, you can always have a good conversation. You run into a group of people are morons. And that's how come you try to avoid groups. You want to get people down to an individual level. And
that's the most antisocial thing I think I've heard in the last couple of years.
Hey, you're welcome.
God, I wish I had the Agent K line from Men in Black.
But yeah, that's exactly what I'm going with. It's the, you know, it's Agent K, where he's just like, you know, people are smart, groups are stupid. And it kind of is true. Like, you just get – the fans of any group are awful. But it's not – It's not that all the fans are terrible. It's that the 5 or 10% of the fan base that is so aggressive that every group has will make everyone else look terrible. But they're the most passionate, and the most passionate are going to be the loudest, and they're going to do very, very, very dumb things.
If we really want to drive as many people away from this podcast as possible, we should eventually do a big, long thing on how the way we argue on message boards – has become the way we argue about politics in real life.
Oh my God. Like,
I've been on that train for about 15 years now. And I've been like, oh my God, like, this is why nothing ever gets done.
The message board culture.
It really is Twitter life
right now. Like, I don't know if you've been following the, Taneshi Coates article on, reparations, where he's going after Bernie Sanders, and then Bernie Sanders supporters all got really mad at Coates, and then Coates got mad at them, and he wrote a follow-up, and then all of his supporters like started yelling at Bernie Sanders. And it's just like you're reading these tweets, and no one's really listening to each other, and no one's talking to each other. They're just talking at each other, and they're always retweeting the worst thing that the other group has said, saying this shows that every supporter of, you know, reparations is the dumbest person in the world, and this shows that every Bernie Sanders supporter like hates puppies. And you're just like, you are two groups that pretty fundamentally agree on everything, like everything, and yet they're at each other's throats just over one small little sliver of a policy debate that's never ever going to happen. So it's truly amazing to watch in real time, just because people just lose their mind online in a way that's
– people just lose their minds in arguments, period, I think. I don't know if online even matters anymore.
Now, online's a big one, but also – and this is a book that has changed my life in a way. I'm a big fan of John Ronson. He wrote The Psychopath Test, The Men Who Stare at Goats, Them – but he just wrote a book on So You've Been Publicly Shamed, and it's about publicly shaming people. And this could be its own segment, but he talks about how people online shame, you know, people who have stepped out of line. And it's, you know, sort of like the dentist who murdered the lion, Cecil the Lion.
PR person who made the AIDS joke.
Yeah, that's actually like, yeah, that kind of stuff. And he really kind of gets into it, and it kind of – I came out of that book really I have made a concerted effort to step away from outrage Twitter. When everybody's outraged about something, I have got no time. I'm out. Like, it people make mistakes. People say dumb things, and you just got to forgive them. Now, if they make a pattern of it, okay, we can go after them. And I do hold celebrities and politicians to a slightly higher standard because they're public figures. But when we, like, just tear apart private figures for something stupid they did, stop it. You're being mean, and you're just doing it to make yourself feel better about tearing another person down. And it's not healthy. And forget about them. Think about you. It makes you a worse person. So stop doing that. Like, it brings your own happiness down. And I don't understand people on Twitter who hate follow people. Like, if you're following Darren Rovell or whatever, why the
fuck? Clay Travis.
Clay Travis? Why the fuck are you still following Clay Travis people? Why the fuck are you doing that to yourself? Stop following him. It goes away. Like, every so often people will retweet Bomani Jones into my timeline. That's a guy who just seeks out controversy wherever he goes. Stop it. These are people who just seek out anger and feed off each other's anger, and all you're doing is making yourself miserable. You're not contributing to the world. You're not, and it's not even a dialogue. It's one thing to follow people who you disagree with, who, you know, who say interesting things, and you're like, wow, I've never really looked at it in that perspective. These are just people who are just professional trolls. Skip Bayless, stop it. Stop following. And it's not Skip Bayless's fault. It's not Clay Travis's fault. It's your fault. It's your fault for following them. If you're angry at them, it's on you. It's really easy to click the button in the little corner of the screen that says unfollow, and you will never see them again. I promise you. Just let it go.
On that note,
yeah, that's my advice to you, everybody.
I feel like you should just drop the mic.
You have like a, and I don't want to get off on a rant here. Segment.
I'll get on a rant. Yeah, I don't care.
Like, I love Dennis Miller growing up.
Yeah, man, how the mighty have fallen. But yeah, he still is one of my all-time favorite jokes. When
I like his books.
Oh, yeah, like, I was a big Dennis Miller fan, but I still always like the joke. And if Crackles is listening, this is aimed directly at you, because this is actually kind of at you, where Dennis Miller said, "You can have my gun when you pry it from my cold, dead hand." Okay, whatever.